Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure to present once again someone who's visited with us before. That is Ed Haslam, the author of the vitally important book, Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. And in my opinion, not only an excellent citizen, but a true hero. Ed, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you very much, Dave.
By the way, I should add that your book was published in soft cover by the Wordsworth Press, copyright 1995. Let's get right to the subject material of your book, Ed. You began investigating the murder of a Dr. Mary Sherman and came up with a whole lot more than just a murder. Tell us about Mary Sherman.
Well, I started off investigating a murder, and I discovered an epidemic, and that is the progress of the book. The epidemic is involved with the a cancer epidemic, which in my opinion traces back to the contamination of the polio vaccine. And the murder of the doctor, that's why I wrote a book to explain how it's all hooked together, happened in New Orleans back in 1964, and is something that was always a difficult subject in terms of it being covered up and there being a lot of mystery and et cetera around it. But as I got further and further into investigating who that person was and the circumstances behind her death and who she worked for and who she knew and who she went to school with and who her professional contacts were, it all led me back to this situation with the polio vaccine. And that is really what we're focused on talking about tonight, because as you said, my book was published in 1995, and in 1995, when I came out and started talking about the contamination of the polio vaccine with monkey viruses and it causing cancer, I was way out on a limb by myself, and there wasn't a lot going on in the press to support what I was saying. And since I'm not a scientist or a doctor, and I don't think you need to be in order to understand these issues, but since I wasn't, I was very concerned about how the scientific community was going to respond to some of this, and frankly, I was in a fairly significant danger of being slam-dunked. And what has happened since then is rather remarkable. And the sort of crowning event of this is an article which has recently appeared in Atlantic Monthly magazine in the February 2000 issue, which reviews the whole state of knowledge of the contamination of the polio vaccine with cancer-causing monkey viruses. And really, that is the subject that we're going to spend most of our time tonight talking about.
It is indeed, Ed, and audiences will also be hearing a reading of this article from the Atlantic Monthly's issue of February of the year 2000. Before we get to that, just for the benefit of people that have not heard our previous interviews, and by the way, I should state that in addition to getting the book, Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus, there are a number of interviews that I've done with Ed about the subject material of his book. There are a number of things beside the SV40 involved in your book, and I'd like to make, perhaps if we have time at the end of the discussion or during the course of it, a political point. If you could tell us briefly, I realize that this is, we can only be very superficial on this, but in addition to Dr. Mary Sherman, one of the top medical people in this country who was murdered in 1964, you link this to a Dr. Alton Oxner and to the assassination of President Kennedy. I wonder if you could just sum that up briefly for us.
Okay, Mary Sherman died in New Orleans in 1964, and therefore the things that occurred in New Orleans during the 1960s are background and sometimes even related. Mary Sherman worked specifically for a doctor by the name of Dr. Alton Oshner, who was the president of the American Cancer Society at one point, and who founded a very large regional medical center down in New Orleans called the Alton Oshner Foundation and hospital and clinic and all those things that go along with that. Oshner himself was a rather flamboyant personality who made a real point in his life about being publicly involved in certain political issues such as communism. And one of his great accomplishments in that area, as he would describe it, was arranging for the radio debates with a fellow by the name of Lee Harvey Oswald several months before the Kennedy assassination. And this is not a matter of conjecture. This is a matter of easily documentable fact, because Oshner turned around and published a phonograph album to prove that he had done this, and I have the album. So the connections there are, what was the former president of the American Cancer Society doing arranging radio debates to expose Lee Harvey Oswald as a, quote, defector, or paint him red in the months before the Kennedy assassination? And then we also have the presence of Jim Garrison, who is the district attorney, not only who investigated the Kennedy assassination in the late 1960s, but who was also district attorney at the time of Mary Sherman's death. And one of Garrison's major political opponents in his investigation of Kennedy was Dr. Alton Ochsner. So the shadow of Jim Garrison's investigation into the Kennedy assassination is very ubiquitous throughout our whole story.
Now, one of the things that is centrally involved in this, and this will later on, a little bit later in the discussion, serve as a bridge to the Atlantic Monthly article, the SV40 or Simian Virus 40 is a cancer-causing virus that contaminated the polio vaccine. How does that figure in the scenario of Mary Sherman, Alton Ochsner, and in the background of that, the Kennedy assassination?
Well, Alton Ochsner was a very influential man in American medicine. He was very tied in at the top levels of medicine and politics. I already mentioned he was president of the American Cancer Society. He was also a high-ranking official in about every medical organization you could mention. He was also very involved in the polio vaccine, and he was a stockholder in the Cutter Laboratories, which was one of the five or so labs that produced the polio vaccine, which was distributed in the 1950s. And at the last minute, before the release of the Salk vaccine, a woman at NIH, who was a friend and associate of Mary Sherman's, as well as some other people I'll talk about here in a minute, but whose job it was to safety test vaccines, found that there were problems with the polio vaccine that they were about to release. And Dr. Ochsner, who was adamant that the polio vaccine be released, and at the time, you know, about 100 kids a day were getting polio, and so he publicly inoculated his own grandchildren to prove that the vaccine was safe. Unfortunate for him and his family, the vaccine was not safe. Bernice Eddy from NIH was right. There was a problem with the vaccine, and one of Dr. Ochsner's grandchildren died, and the other got polio. And so this man has a enormous connection with the polio vaccine because he has a personal investment in it involving his grandchildren. One of them died, the other has polio. He has a financial investment in terms of being a stockholder of one of the laboratories producing it, and he just has a medical investment, you might call it a professional investment, and the fact that he staked so much of his career and reputation on it. So when the subject of what's wrong with the polio vaccine came up, and they discovered, I'll get to they in a second, when they discovered that there was a problem with the vaccine, and I should explain what that problem is here in a second, then Ochsner was at the center of these events, is the point. Now, to understand what we're talking about here, because a lot of people who are not familiar with this would immediately say, well, I mean, what is this connection between monkey viruses and the polio vaccine? I mean, they seem like very different subjects here. Why are we talking about them in the same sentence? Well, when they went to grow the polio vaccine for mass production of the vaccine, they had to grow the polio virus, and they found the polio virus grew very well on certain cells, and these cells were kidney cells from monkeys. And so they actually grew the polio vaccine that was distributed to 100 million Americans on monkey kidney cells. And when they took out the polio virus to make the vaccine, they also, incidentally, wound up taking out all these other viruses that were already in the monkey cells. And there were a lot of them. I've never heard an official number on how many, but there's more than 40, because SV40 is monkey virus number 40 or simian virus number 40. That means there was a simian virus number 39, a simian virus number 41. You know, there's lots of monkey viruses in there, and the perspective at the time was that these are just incidental little viruses, and you know, because there's lots of viruses around that don't cause problems. But what happened was, after they had already started the mass inoculation, that they discovered that one of these viruses, at least, was causing cancer in a lot of their laboratory animals. And in fact, one of the most disconcerting and shocking things about this whole story, and this gets straight to this Atlantic Monthly article, points out, I'm just going to read here for a second, because nothing says it better than this. They're talking about Bernice Eddy in 1960 discovering that this virus was causing cancer. And it says, alarm spread through the scientific community as researchers realized that nearly every dose of the vaccine, the polio vaccine, had been contaminated. In 1961, federal health officials ordered vaccine manufacturers to screen for the virus and eliminate it from the vaccine. Now we're getting to the good part, or the bad part, actually. Worried about creating a panic, they kept the discovery of SV40 under wraps and never recalled existing stocks. For 2 more years, millions of additional people were needlessly exposed, bringing the total to 98 million Americans from 1955 and 1963. They continued to distribute this vaccine for 2 years after they knew they had a problem in order to keep this problem secret. I don't know if that bothers you. It bothers me.
Well, it doesn't exactly set me to doing the varsity rag, I can tell you that much. But yeah. Now, with regard to this contamination, Ed, and perhaps we're... I also want to get in one more aspect of your book in the discussion, or perhaps a couple of others briefly, because, again, people have not... there will be people listening who have not heard our previous discussions. Obviously, if you have a cancer-causing virus in the vaccine, and all of these people are getting it, it's going to cause some problems. Now, before we get to what you found, from the nature of the forensics with Mary Sherman, you concluded that she was in all likelihood, in fact, almost certainly working on a vaccine for this cancer-causing virus to protect those people that you just spoke about, and that there was a linear particle accelerator involved in mutating the virus, and that led to Mary Sherman's death. Again, it's a tall order. If you could sum that up for us, and then let's get to the discussion of the epidemiology of some of this and this wonderful Atlantic Monthly article.
Okay. The point that you make, that it's a fairly complex point, is a real point about this story, which is kind of why I wrote a book, because this is not a one-liner.
Sure.
But the question, and it's a very common-sense question that everybody can participate in here, the question is, what did they do once they knew? Once they realized that they had already inoculated nearly 100 million people with a cancer-causing virus, what did they do then? The first thing they did was keep the subject secret, as we just discussed.
And continue, by the way, to do so, apparently, at least some of them, to the best of their abilities. Go ahead.
But I believe they also set in motion an effort to try to develop a vaccine to prevent the problem before the public found out about it. I mean, I think their assumption is the public would eventually find out about it, but they would like to have a solution in hand beforehand. And I believe, and this is what I argue in the book, that they launched what I call a medical Manhattan Project, a project that was as secret and as important as the development of the atomic bomb, but whose mission was to develop an anti-cancer vaccine. And what they were in a hurry, because this was... this is like the biggest problem that's ever happened in the United States. I mean, no foreign enemy's ever killed 100 million Americans or anything even close to that scale. Okay, and if they did, we'd be real mad about it. So they were in a hurry to try to find a solution because they really didn't want to be held politically accountable for doing this. And accountability is really the issue here. And so what I believe that they did was they started this project, and they needed to get these monkey viruses to mutate so that they could find a benign strain to be used in a vaccine. And they needed that to happen in a hurry. And they couldn't sit around and wait for Darwin, you know. The evolutionary changes take a long time. They had to do something that would encourage these monkey viruses to change. And I believe that they used radiation from a linear particle accelerator to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, I discuss exactly where, in what building, and talk about it in great detail. And I believe that Dr. Mary Sherman was one of the doctors involved in this super secret project to try to develop a vaccine to prevent the cancer epidemic that I think we have already seen.
And indeed, Ed, jumping in here, we have seen that there's very convincing evidence that SV40 causes cancer. Now, the last point before we jump to this article, in your book, you analyzed National Cancer Institute data and concluded that there was an epidemic of soft tissue cancers afflicting this country that resulted from this contamination. Again, if you could sum that up for us.
Well, the National Cancer when I first read that a major person, Dr. Bernice Eddy from the National Cancer Institute, National Institute of Health, the lead vaccine safety tester, had said that there was a cancer-causing virus in the polio vaccine way back in 1960. I was very concerned about that statement as either being right or wrong. Okay, and frankly, my reason for researching it at the time had to do with investigating this murder, and I really wasn't looking at public health issues. But when I understood what she had said, and I realized the magnitude of it, I said, I've got to find out whether or not there ever was an epidemic. I mean, did this thing ever happen? Because I don't feel like the press told us that it did. So I went over to the medical library, because I wanted to see for myself. And I went and got the Cancer Statistics Review from the National Cancer Institute. And in fact, in my book, I actually photocopied a page out of their thing and put it in as an appendix in my book so everybody could see the raw data themselves. And there is no question. I mean, this is like having a giraffe standing in your front yard. You don't have to be a zoologist to know it's a giraffe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a biostatistician to see an epidemic of the proportions that I'm talking about here, okay? Now, these statistics show 37 sites of cancer, okay? A site is like breast or prostate or an organ of origin, right? And if you look at the 37 sites, and you take lung and set it on the side just due to the cigarette issue, okay, and the lung numbers are terrible, okay, but what's left is 36 different sites, okay, and we're looking at this in a time frame of a 16-year window that starts in about 1972 and ends in about 1988. And during that 16-year window, four of these 36 cancers go through the roof. The other 32, which is, you know, the vast majority of them out there, show no growth at all. I mean, they're exactly, the line is nearly flat. It's a 0% increase over 16 years. And this is, you know, incidence rates, not death rates, but incidence rates, the number of people who got cancer. It's men and women, it's all ages, and it's been adjusted for the baby boom type of population way of going through it. Okay, but what you're able to see with this is that four of these cancers, which are breast, prostate, melanoma, which is skin cancer, and lymphoma, show a increase of about 50% during this 16-year thing. And this translates out to about 500,000 cases. And if you put a dollar amount on it in terms of cost of treatment, you're looking at about, I mean, there's 500,000 cases a year. You're looking at about $50 billion a year. We're looking at about $200 million a day of medical insurance premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no explanation for what is causing this.
Actually, Ed, let me jump in. I would amend that to say that to date, no official explanation has come to light. I think that you've provided an excellent working hypothesis. I would also add, and we just don't have time to do justice to this under the circumstances, that in your book you also discuss the probability that the genetic mutating of the SV40 virus in the search to produce a vaccine may very well have led to the development of AIDS as well, either deliberately and or accidentally.
Well, it certainly had the potential to. And it's a serious subject, and I spend a chapter talking about that part of the thing.
Well, that's why I say may very well. It may not have, but I think the evidence, and in combination with other research that's been done, certainly points very strongly in that direction. Now, the hypothesis that you presented, about this SV40 contamination and the epidemic of soft tissue cancers has been reinforced in a tremendous way by this article in the Atlantic Monthly, the February 2000 issue. And for the benefit of the audience, I'm just going to read the title again, The Virus and the Vaccine. Reminds me of the title of your book, by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher. And this centers around someone, Ed, who, along with you, I would state is a genuine hero in the medical and political field, Michele Carboni, or Carbone. Tell us about his research in mesothelioma.
Well, one of the questions that comes up after somebody hears the claim that I just made about the cancer epidemic is, well, gee, if that's anywhere close to true, it seems like there would be some people in the scientific community taking a look at it, and it seems like there would be some evidence around. And what would that evidence be? And one of the things I realized as I got into this was people started sending me information from around the globe, and I realized that outside the United States, that where the federal government, American government, does not have quite as much influence, there was a fair level of awareness of this issue. And one of the places that has been researching it for a number of years is Italy, particularly the University of Ferrara. And what happened was Michele Carboni is an Italian national. He's went to the University of Rome Medical School, and he is a genetic specialist. He's actually a human pathologist, but his niche is genetic investigations and stuff. And he came to the United States at the invitation of the National Institute of Health and worked first at always in the Chicago area, but for the University of Chicago for a while, and now he's with Loyola University up in Chicago. And what he does is he looks into actual tumors and sort of says, what's in here? You know, and looks for viruses and stuff from there. And he noticed that there was a very specific type of cancer, which is called a pleural mesothelioma.
Speaking of pleural ailments, and by the way, I would add that as we're recording this on the evening of March 5th of the year 2000, both Ed and I are suffering from mild colds, and so if we sound less than 100%, there's a reason for that. Go ahead, Ed.
And I may occasionally have to cough like I just did.
And we're suffering some pleural difficulty, spelled P-L-U-R-A-L. Go ahead.
Yes, and pleural means chest cavity.
Right.
Okay? And a pleural mesothelioma is a type of cancer which grows not in the lung itself, but in the linings around the lung, between the lungs and the rib cage. And this type of cancer was almost unheard of in the United States prior to 1950. There were a handful of cases, I mean, like under 10 a year.
And I want to note, just jumping in, note the change in the epidemiology of this cancer over a relatively short period of time. Continue, Ed.
Okay, now, today, year 2000, there's about 3,000 cases a year. So we went from a handful of cases every year to 3,000 cases a year. And if you put that on a graph, the percentage changes are incredible. And so Carboni said, well, what is really causing this? And the accepted explanation up to that point in time was this was a cancer caused by asbestos. And they had some reasons for saying that. Carboni said, well, since it seems to occur right after the polio vaccine, perhaps there's a connection, and perhaps this SV40 has something to do with it. So he very specifically went after looking for SV40 in these particular tumors, and he went to Harvey Pass, and this is what the Atlantic Monthly article tracks very, very carefully here. Harvey Pass was the chief thoracic surgeon, meaning chest surgeon, for the National Cancer Institute, and had been for many years. And over the years, as he tried to operate on people who had this pleural mesothelioma cancer, he had saved samples of those tumors. And so Carboni went to him and said, can I get access to all these tumors that you've saved over the years to see if we can locate this virus in them? So Michel Carboni, working in the United States at the invitation of the National Institute of Health and working with Harvey Pass from the National Cancer Institute, went and started investigating these tumors to see if they could find SV40 in them, which is a little bit like the smoky pistol investigation. And they found it, and they found plenty of it. And the results of their research were published in magazines like Oncogene Magazine, which is one of the major cancer publications. And some of the things I really enjoy about this Atlantic Monthly article, which we want to tell everybody how to get, is the fact that they have comments from people like the editor of Cancer Magazine and stuff about this research. And it's all really terribly important stuff.
Ed, let's interrupt at this point very briefly. We've got about another minute plus. Briefly tell people not only how to get your book, but how to get this article, and then we'll continue with the analysis in the second half of the tape.
Okay. To get this article, let's start with that. You can get it on the Internet. First of all, you can get it at the bookstore if they still have the February 2000 issue of Atlantic Monthly Magazine. It's a long article, well-written, easy to read. Blah, blah, blah. Or get it at a library. Now, if you have the Internet, you can get it at home tonight, okay? And the website for the Atlantic Monthly is www.theatlantic.com. And when you get there, since they're now on the next month's issue, just click search and type in monkey virus. And then up will pop the article. The article is in three parts on the Internet. It's all in one issue, but it's kind of long, so they've broken it into three parts. Doesn't matter which one you go to first, because they all have links to the other two articles. And so you can download and print all three of these articles and get this fabulous presentation of this very important public health subject for free at home tonight, courtesy of the Internet.
Okay, and very quickly about Wordsworth Press and how to get your book.
Okay, there's a couple ways to get the book. You can get it direct from the publisher.
And, of course, that publisher is Wordsworth Publications. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I think the easiest way for people to get it is just go to Amazon.com,
mm-hmm.
and in the little search gadget they've got in there under books, just type monkey virus.
And only 30% of the people in this country, though, Ed, do have computers, so give the address for Wordsworth if you would.
Okay, it's Wordsworth, that's all one word, WORDSWORTH, P.O. Box 20202, Albuquerque, New Mexico. You can use ABQ to abbreviate Albuquerque, NM to abbreviate New Mexico, and the zip is 87154.
All righty, we've been visiting with Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus. We're going to join Ed in our next half hour to talk about this Atlantic Monthly article. For Ed Haslam, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.